All right, so I'm here with Drew Fortin. I am so excited for this conversation as he's one of the marketing folks that I've gotten to work with up close-ish, but also have kind of admired from afar as well. I think there's a lot of exciting things going on with Predictive Index, and I'm really going to need to pay attention to time here to make sure this doesn't turn into a sprawling two-hour interview. But Drew, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here, John. Happy to help in any way I can.
Awesome. So I was looking through your LinkedIn profile before we jumped on the call, and I saw over the last 6 years, you've had about four different job titles. But the thing that stuck out to me was this kind of like exponential growth of your career within the company and taking on more and more responsibilities along the way. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you've gotten to where you are today?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a, it's funny, I tell people my, if you look at my resume, it's like the island of misfit toys. But at the same time, there's a, you know, the journey always looks so much cleaner when you look back versus, right? And you, yeah, and you talk through it. But my career has always been in marketing, and then in many different industries like e-commerce, marketing technology, local media and advertising, and now the past 7 years at PI and talent optimization and human capital. And it's over that time has faced what essentially in all B2B companies face is this tension of marketing and sales. So then you can see my career at PI kind of mimics that. I started as head of marketing. And then as we started to generate leads, it was like, we got to start closing those leads, right? And so then you have that natural tension with sales. And over time, I started to oversee marketing and sales. Now, mind you, PI is unique in that the predictive index that is unique in that we're also distributed through a third-party network of the world's best talent optimization consultants. So we have that as well. So it's like marketing, sales, and then really getting involved with strategy and growth.
Yeah.
And that's a growth, crafting visions and all that stuff is a passion of mine. So I think that my career trajectory mimics a lot of the trajectory and growth that PI has had. Right, we've grown from 4,000 clients to now we're just shy of 10,000 annual subscribing clients. Wow. We've grown revenues from, I think at that time when I first started, we're at 16 million in billings and we're approaching 100 million in annual billings. So wow, there's a lot of great growth. And our partner network too is 30 partners and now we're over 700 partners.
Wow.
So a lot of great growth. We had 30 employees when I started, we're at 300. So a lot of that's matched, but what I always tell people is you are a good leader, but that doesn't mean you're a good leader in every situation. Mm-hmm. And I have just been so fortunate that I also have great leaders in my, manager is Mike Zani, the CEO, and he has a business partner, Daniel Muskies. They kind of like run front of house, back of house. Yeah. And I have great relationships with both, and they've offered me great mentorship and opportunity along the way. And I think that that mix of I'm a growth leader, I love it. When things start to go like, okay, cool, it's good, and we're cruising, I'm not going to be amped up and I'm not going to be a great leader for that next phase because that's going to be structure and building and all these things, right? So it's, I just feel super fortunate because I think it's more right moment, right time. And what we're doing at PI is just, it's like, I love my job. I read business books all the time. You see behind me here, like, and all these business books help me at work and they help us build great product, right? Because that's the business we're in, is helping teams be amazing and understand their strategy so well in that relationship so they can get better growth than they ever thought.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. What's really cool that you touched on earlier is you've been able to grow with the company, which is a challenge for a lot of people. I mean, and that's nothing against the people, but it's really difficult to be good at all the different stages that your company's on over a 7-year period, going from, you know, low tens of millions of dollars to what, 9 figures? Yes. So there's a lot of change that happens there. And I think you need a good boss. You also need to be incredibly
talented. Yeah. Actually, what you're bringing up too makes me think of like, along the way, I've also gotten a ton of mentorship, business coaches. I'm part of peer advisory groups. I'm always networking. I'm always trying to get feedback and understand how I can be better. And part of what I, you know, part of asking for help is also being open to the idea that you can't be great at everything at any moment in time. So as you're saying, like, I don't believe I'm great at everything.
Yeah.
I try to give things away that I'm not good at.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it, is just being really aware of the things you're not good at and building team around you to help do that, or giving it to someone else who can do it better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that resonates. It's really tough for people to let go of their Legos as the company scales. Right. And the people who try to hoard the Legos oftentimes end up getting run over because they just don't know everything. They don't know,
right.
They need to let some of that stuff go. So that resonates with me.
Yeah. It's funny, right? If you're so focused on your career and your own growth, you may not give up your Legos. And the funny thing I think I realize is the more that you open up to the idea that you could give things away, it's just funny how like your own career growth just happens to take off.
Yeah. Yeah. You get to learn from amazing people. You get insights into that, but your role kind of shifts a little bit.
That's right.
One of the things that excites me the most about Predictive Index is you've made a lot of long-term bets that I think only helps the momentum of the company as you get bigger. You didn't go incredibly heavy all in on paid acquisition early. You invested in building HBR style content on your site. Mm-hmm. The channel programs, from what I've heard, I've never been at a company with a large channel program, but from what I've heard, is they are a slower build, but they build an unbelievable, like kind of unstoppable force down the line. You've invested in kind of owning your own category. How did you think about those bets 7 years ago? And where was the company 7 years ago?
The company 7 years ago was a behavioral assessment company with amazing relationships with PI certified partners, right? And it was essentially like the best kept secret. I would talk to people and they'd be like, I just don't want PI to be a secret anymore. Like, it's pretty awesome, right? But then there were some people that benefited from that. I don't want my competitors to know that you can have a product that helps you understand like the behavioral makeup of the team and align a strategy to that. Like, what?
Yeah.
So there was this natural tension at the beginning. And that to me was always like the hint that like there's something big here, because I came in and I'm like, okay, I'm thinking like this is a product primarily used in the hiring process to understand people. And I would talk to our certified partners who have built amazing multi-million dollar businesses on this. They're like, Drew, if you put me in front of a hiring person, in front of an HR person, like, no, you need to connect me with heads of CEO, like CEOs, heads of
company.
That's who I talk to.
Yeah.
And that's been the history of PI. Our founder, Arnold Daniels, we actually have a picture of him in a memory box in our lobby at our Westwood headquarters. And he's at a whiteboard drawing the org chart of a leadership team, and he's drawing their behavioral patterns next to it.
Uh-huh.
Even then he's saying like, okay, you're this type of company in this sort of industry at this stage of growth, like, let's think about this.
Yeah.
Right. That process is called talent optimization. And it was through our understanding what all of our consultants were doing and our partners were doing all over the world that we realized like, hey, did you all realize you're all doing kind of the same thing, but y'all call it something a little different?
Yeah.
And it was through that journey that we realized like, hey, there's two options here. There's an assessment market that is very red ocean and there's a ton of players. And the way to build in that market is by category harvesting. You can acquire companies, you can grow that way. Or there's this thing that they're all doing that is different. It is different than just assessment. It is using the assessment to get data so you can make strategic decisions. And there's a discipline here. And there's probably a category here because this is at the intersection of HR and strategy. And guess what? Strategy, there's not a lot of technology that does strategy. We hire consultants to do strategy.
Right.
Oh, and guess what? We have consultants that are working on strategy. So we're like, wow, this seems kind of like an interesting, intriguing idea. And it took us a couple of years to kick this thought around. Our head of product at that time was Matt Pepsel, who's now a vice president in our partner channel world. And we were chatting through this and it was like, are we a category play? Like, what should we do? Right. And to category or not to category was something we tackled in 2018. And we were like, you know what? We're going to do this. Talent optimization is a thing. Our network believes it. We believe it. It became the thesis for going and raising a round of growth equity at the tune of $50 million, which we kicked off in 2019 with General Catalyst Partners. And after that, it was like, we need to build a category and we need to realize that this is not like, let's pop growth in 2 to 3 years. This is a multi-year play. Right. You look at companies that have done this like Salesforce, they have done this like HubSpot, and they didn't build thing. Inbound marketing wasn't built overnight. It took 6-7 years before people were actually even talking about it.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate enough that we have leadership and we have investors that realize that this is a long-term play with a huge upside. And I think that's part of this is having that realization that this is a marathon. We are going to work through it. It's going to come with a lot of fits and starts and bumps in the road. But that's definitely how we look at this long-term play. We can be applied to pretty much any business. Yeah. And we apply to several personas in an organization. Those things are also can be detrimental to a company's growth if they don't focus. And so that's kind of like right now is making sure that we're hyper-focused on the key personas in an org and maybe a couple or key industries, as even your firm has helped us do too. So we can make sure we kind of like find our right wedges in the market. Mm-hmm. And then we can tip the scales over the next 3 years versus trying to scale like crazy over the next year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. How did you start to narrow in on the right personas for your business? Like, I think that the story with HubSpot has been talked about a lot where they kind of struggled for years figuring That's right. out which their persona was. I think it was Marketing Mary and
yeah.
someone else. But how did, like, where was that decision made for your company? Was that from the sales team providing feedback or was that at the C-suite?
The personas themselves was one of my first projects that I decided to take on when I joined PI almost 7 years ago. And there's a book by Adele Ravella called Buyer Personas that okay. is a very like fundamental read just around like doing research and interviews of people to do persona research that I found super intriguing. But ultimately what came out of that for me was the realization, especially in this world, is you need a persona isn't a person. A persona is almost a mindset of a person. And so the more that we can think about, okay, yes, for instance, our hiring product is built primarily for the senior recruiting manager. But this is a recruiting manager that wants to be the head of HR. This is the recruiting manager that wants to grow. This is the recruiting manager that's open to the possibility that like there are tools out there that can help you understand yourself better and understand fit better, right? And so kind of that growth set, that growth-minded person. And so that has led to a combination of not just understanding, trying to really get down to the nuts and bolts of key personas for each product, but also our own brand tone. And you've probably been exposed to this too. Our brand archetype, we call the magician. So I speak in books, I'm sorry, but there's another great book called The Hero and the Outlaw, which I okay. highly recommend.
I'm writing all these down.
Okay.
I'm going to share them all.
Great. That's a book on brand archetypes. So if you understand the key personas, you get inside their mind, you understand what they're going through, their trials and tribulations, and the hero's journey that they're on, you can understand what role in the hero's journey that you play and your product plays for them. And for us, we're like the supernatural aid, right? We are a magician. We give them this like thing that helps them realize like, oh, I never knew I could get that information. This is pretty cool. I want to use this on everything.
Yeah.
And it's that moment of enlightenment that intrigues them and gets them more excited and allows them to realize like, I can do this.
Right.
And that's absolutely, you know, that mix for us.
And when you're going for those entrepreneurs, like I think of those people as entrepreneurial, right? They're looking to grow. Not every recruiting manager is looking to grow in their career.
Yep.
There's got to be downstream impacts of that, where even though not everybody wants to move up in their career, like once you get to these people who are driving that kind of change inside of the companies, it's also going to bleed into the people who are not early adopters or who are less entrepreneurial.
Yes. This is typical crossing the chasm, early adopter stuff, which is in our own effort, we're building a category. We need early adopters. We need the people who are going to take the risk and those chances early on to get an edge themselves. And over time, we're going to build enough of that credibility and momentum. So yeah, the others tip in. Absolutely.
And so I want to talk about content and some of the long-term bets that you all have made around content outside of category creation. So you came up with the idea for category creation. If I remember correctly, you already had a channel program in place because the company has been around for a long time before 2000.
That's right. Yeah, the company was founded in the 1950s, and it was founded as a subscription model, 100% through a partner network.
Okay.
So that's always been a differentiator for us.
And has content always been a part of the DNA of the company?
It has not.
Okay. So when you were deciding, when you came in, or whenever it was decided to really make a big bet on content, how, like, you all have been so thoughtful. It's like you're playing chess. You're like so strategic in how you're putting together your game plan. And like I said, I think it leads to kind of accelerating growth later on over time.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get buy-in on investing in content versus paid acquisition or buying billboards or all those types of things?
So by the very nature of our network, the majority of the business that they drive is through word of mouth. And the majority of the way that they drive their business was by doing essentially what we call the magic trick, which was like, hey, well, take the PI behavioral assessment and I'll give you a read back of that. And you're like, whoa, you're telling me things that like my parents know, but like no one else knows.
Yeah.
Right. And it was through that trick, which isn't really a trick, it's just understanding how to read a behavioral profile, was like, wow, there's so much here. Now, if you just think about that process, what are the factors of behavior? Right?
Yeah.
How do you apply that in business? Where are the pitfalls along, even before we had like talent optimization mapped out along like the employee journey?
Right.
How do managers actually use this in this work setting? All those questions, like even that I had, like off the bat, it was like, we just got to start writing about this.
Yeah.
So from the early days, we just like put the PI blog, which we had one as any company did at that time, but just in like overdrive. And we'd be interviewing partners and writing it up. We'd be doing surveys. We'd be just speaking from our own personal experiences. I don't think the content we created at the beginning was amazing, but I think just like anything else, you just got to get started.
Yeah.
And then people go like, oh, it'd be really interesting if we could have this content and that content. And then eventually we were like, we should do reports, right? And so that's something over the last few years that has been like, now that we have talent optimization and we have these pillars, right? We have design, which is how to understand strategy and team together. We have hiring, which is how to hire the best and keep them engaged and make sure they don't screw up what you're already doing, but are additive. We have inspiring, which is like, don't manage people the way you want to manage people, manage the people the way they were meant to be driven, right?
Yeah.
And then, and our probably our newest pillar for PI is this diagnose notion, which is like performance engagement, employee engagement and performance. And how do, and what are those insights that you're trying to get so you can go back and optimize the whole process, hence talent optimization. It really, John, I think just exponentially like opened up our world to the myriad of ways that we can help the world when we arrived at talent optimization. A team got together and wrote this 100-page playbook, which you can find at talentoptimization.org and 100 web pages of all the base, all like the fundamental elements that we believe that is talent optimization and how to do it. And all we're doing is trying to go deeper on those for our different personas. So now we start to get much more strategic. We're like, okay, for each one of the products, four products, we have four key personas. We have four aptitudes of talent optimization, right? Yeah. And then we start to do this overlay and you have this matrix. And then each persona is on their career journey. Now what we're trying to figure out is like, at what stage are senior recruiters coming to us? At what stage in their career are they? And what can we help them with? And what roles are they typically recruiting for? And how can PI best help? And we're literally creating a grid with boxes and we're saying, we're going to focus on these ones. We're going to ignore these ones for now. Mm-hmm. And we're being super methodical about it. This has also opened the door up to reports for us. We've been doing a state of TO report every year. We have a state of the manager report. And it's no surprise that these reports are now mimicking the aptitudes of talent optimization, design, hire, inspire, and diagnose. Every quarter, we're getting on a cadence of having a different report that appeals to a different user. And all of this is more value to the world. How can we help people do talent optimization without PI? That's step one.
Yeah.
Get them excited about it. And then when they need help, when it gets complicated, when they're ready to get more involved in their strategy, we're going to be there for them. So we're not writing content to try to sell them on us. Writing them content to try to help them do TO. And I think that was a major mind shift for us as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like it was kind of grounded in wanting to understand your customer, performing surveys, getting an understanding of what they needed, wanting to provide assets and materials to educate them, and then really mapping out that buyer's journey to create content to help them at each step of the way.
That's absolutely right. And I would say, you know, just take a lesson from what's happening in streaming services with like Netflix and anyone else is you have channels now, right?
Yeah.
Like you have reports, you have podcasts, you have videos, you have webinars. These are all your different type of media. And then you have your different personas and you're effectively, what you're trying to do is create this content stream for each one of the personas. And the more you create, the more that is valuable, the more they'll stick and they'll consume and it'll suck other people into the flywheel as well, right?
Yeah.
And so we're definitely taking this like holistic approach. We also got very product oriented as well. We have a product for each one of those aptitudes, design, hire, inspire, and diagnose. But we also have this product internally that is supported by our product team that we call PI Learn. And now that's where we're putting all of our content and it's being organized and curated for a subscriber for free. And it's adding even the element of curated experiences and learning courses as like a more advanced and evolved edition. And that's kind of like our way of saying, hey, subscribe to PI, consume what you want, binge what you want. We're going to keep recommending you content to help you on your journey.
Okay. And so when you say subscribers, those are customers?
For PI Learn, you're effectively, you know, in a traditional sense, if you access our state of TO report, which you can pretty much get for free on our website, but you wanted to get more, more detailed insights, behind the scenes look, all this other stuff, you would create a PI Learn account. You become a lead in our system. We also give you a PI Learn account You have your own profile and dashboard that shows you all the content you've consumed. There's gamification, badges. This is all like pre before you become a paying client of PI or you're subscribing to our products.
Okay.
Yep. But we're just taking a product-centric approach to how we do this.
Right.
Yep.
And I always think about this as like you're bringing parts of your product external so people can continue to learn. And like this
is absolutely right.
A huge strategy, still is, but with workflow automation software, help people build it in Excel. Ultimately, they're going to want the automation that comes with it as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
And then how did you get the buy-in? Did it help that you already had a channel partner program that was working for you, that was helping you grow? Like a lot of companies, they look to really invest in paid acquisition early on and quickly because they would need that growth. The VCs want the growth. The CEO wants the growth. And content takes a little bit longer. And I think it's really tough to predict content over like a 3 to 6 month period.
Yep.
But it's really easy. Nobody regrets investing in content over a 12 to 24 month period because it's extremely predictable if you look over a long horizon.
Yes. And it's also much easier to say that when you've been through the 24 months than before you start.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of, whether it's growth leader, head of marketing, head of revenue, head of demand, I think that a lot of times we start and we feel stuck between a rock and a hard place because it's like, well, we need growth now. And you're like, yes, but in order to get you the most efficient growth and long-term growth and growth we can predict and rely on, we have to do this thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's just the difference between also like brand and demand. And so I think part of that is really having the buy-in of your leadership up front that, hey, are we building something together? Cool. Yeah. This is easily a 2 to 3 year journey. Are you up for it? Awesome. Right. Yeah. This is what it can look like. Now, in the short term, right? So I do think you have to hold the fort, right? You have to make sure that you're controlling what's in your control.
Yeah.
So I do think you could risk going all in on content. And of course, you might skin your knees and even trip covenants if you don't make things happen now. So I think it's really just about having that balance, right? So what I would say though is there is a benefit even at PI. We separate our demand gen team from our content team. In fact, our content team is now called the Content Studio. And they have actually become matrixed into our product. So our product managers have engineering, like people that build software, and they have Content Studio, people that build learning and content and creative. That's where they should live.
Yeah.
Right. So now demand can think about how do I use all of these assets and what we have and how do I repackage it and repurpose it in order to pull people in order to get people on that journey. So I think that's probably one of the greatest mistakes is a demand gen person could come in and be like, that's cool, but we're going to do this content thing. That doesn't fly. Right. So maybe what you should do is come in and say, awesome, we're going to have somebody focused on straight up demand gen campaigns and we don't have any content now, so we're going to have to go all paid. That's going to have a short runway. It's going to be super expensive. You should be okay with that.
Yeah.
And now over time, we're going to decrease our cost of customer acquisition and get more predictable returns with content. But I need you to invest in both. We can't invest in one or the other. I think separating that's probably the best way to do it.
Interesting. And how do you look at the success of content from a marketing perspective? So I guess you have a little bit, you have a luxury where content is not just a tool to get your brand's content out there. There's also goals to help enhance the product and enhance the starting experience as you move into the product.
Yes.
But how do you think about the, how do you measure and understand if content's being successful? Is it just leads or is it revenue coming in from content? Are you looking at other factors too?
Sure. We have the ability to view impact of content in many different ways. It could be leads. It could be net new ads of target personas. There's also attribution to deals closed won, revenue. I would say that amidst all of that, which probably gives you more insight into the types of content and the topics of content, all those metrics kind of guide you down that path. I would say more important than that is you are creating a movement. And the people you work with should feel that first and foremost. There is something that is magical when you actually create a piece of content. People go, I can't believe we just produced this. This is awesome. This feels good, right? You're probably going to want to feel good again, right? Yeah. It's that excitement that when we do this and our partners in the network are like, this piece was awesome, right? That's actually worth way more, right? To us, because that is like, okay, this is resonating. This is having an impact.
Yeah.
Then all of those like, oh, we measured it and it generated revenue. Right. And we're going to be super sophisticated about this. At the end of the day, we're creating an experience that's supposed to get somebody to get something done and feel a certain way.
Yeah.
And if we can at least understand that we're getting people to feel that certain way, then we're like, okay, check that box. Now, are we helping them get that thing done?
Yeah.
Right. So in order to build the momentum all along the way has been this excitement. And we can measure the excitement through like press mentions of like talent optimization in the market or how many times PI is going to mention in the market, which we absolutely do. But I would say more so than not, we've reached the point where we know that we have a really great content team and content engine. We know we can produce amazing content. Everyone's like, wow, this team produced, like, we always get that great feedback. That's awesome. So now it's about making sure and being confident that we're placing, as you mentioned, these big, big bets. We made this recent move where now the content studio is part of the product team. And that content studio is literally developing content that'll be used in the paid product as well as this PI Learn product.
Yeah.
Right. And now we have even more confidence as an organization that our team, that our content studio team, right, which is about 10 people right now and will continue to grow, right? Like these content producers are going to be creating content so well aligned with our product that we just need more of them. It's not a question anymore. It's just not, right? I'm sure some people would be looking at that and be like, yeah, but there's ROI and you got to look at your investment. You've taught us this too at Compound Growth Marketing, John, which is like, you're doing a bunch of little things that build on top of each other.
Yeah.
And as we started this part of the conversation, it's much easier years later to be like, yep, that content thing made a lot of sense.
Right.
But where we have made the point, like we are investing in content and we're building a category and our investment in content will never be enough.
Yeah.
We cannot overinvest in educating the world on talent optimization. It's impossible at this moment.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it. It's like, we just got to produce as much content as possible that is helping people. And it's not about being really strategic about the resource. If it's aligned with product, we have full confidence that that what we're saying in the market is going to be highly related to the value we can provide.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I think, When I was in-house building out strategy for content, I was oftentimes backing into the numbers. And so what I think over the years is like, what's the ROI going to be? You know, what volume do I think we can drive? But one of the things that I think we did that I didn't pay that I think was helpful was we set the vision to be a little bit bigger than that, right? It was like, for us at Workable, it was, let's touch the customer on each time they have a question. Let's be there to answer it for them at each different step in the funnel. And so that those types of things, like that provides a micro goal for you to build towards, like, here is the type of content. We want to have content available for each step in the hiring process to help people out. Mm-hmm. And then I think on a grander scale, it's like, you know, your content successful. It doesn't matter how many leads you're driving on a monthly basis. when people are coming to you and they're asking to sponsor your podcast, or they want to, like when you're getting legit co-marketing requests from companies who you know, from people who you've met before, not just, you know, someone spamming you on LinkedIn, when you're getting, when you're seeing an increase in talent optimization, like your content successful, I guarantee the ROI is there, even if your marketing automation system says that it's driving zero leads, like you're having an impact on the industry and people are finding out about your product because they're hearing about what's happening. So there are all these signals that are really tough. And the challenge is it's really tough to understand that in the very beginning. Like those things take a while and they compound over time too.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point, which is if you just focus on what's in front of you and the job to be done right now, and you don't have that vision, there is no such thing as momentum.
Right.
Right. So it's the very act of trying to craft a vision and getting people on board and saying like, this is what we're going to do in 3 to 5 years or 10 years, and this is what we're going to accomplish. Just the act of getting alignment on that starts to generate faith and belief that, oh, wow, we could actually do this.
Yeah.
That energy itself is momentum that then fuels content creation, that then fuels other things. So I think kind of what you're pointing at is, yes, in order to grow, you must want to grow. And you must have an idea of something that is so big and great, right? That is worthy, right? And I'm so grateful that these days, like, businesses more often than not are starting to get that. I feel like it's clicking, especially over the last 24 months or so with like purpose and with like purpose driven ideas and trying to engage employees.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'm tempted to go on, but I've been warned to keep these things shorter. So I really appreciate your time. It was great getting to talk to you. I think I learned a lot. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Bye.